Once again, we are live. We made it. We're here today for everybody.
Raymond, what's been going on, man? How are you?
Callum, it's been quite a week for sure. It's all been about the business. This week hasn't been, you know, getting out shooting much. This coming weekend, however, I have some fun engagements. They were supposed to be at a rock climbing wall, which I was really excited for, but the rock climbing facility said no, essentially. So we're going to do it in their own jiu-jitsu gym.
What?
I'm excited for that one. That one's going to be cool. That's why I picked up some new lighting modifiers to try out a few new techniques that I can't wait to share.
That is crazy. Yeah, I'm excited to see those.
What have you been up to?
I also have been up to a lot of the business. It, you know, tax time is right around the corner, so you got to put your ducks in a row. Went out shooting with some other Toronto wedding photographers there during the week. Had a lovely engagement session on the weekends. It's up on my blog. And then just been plugging away for the last few days, trying to get everything prepared.
For tax time.
My accountant is going to love me.
They always do, don't they? Trying to write everything off. How'd you find these other wedding photographers in Toronto? Have you known them for a while?
I've known, one guy is Shlomi Amiga, awesome guy. And Niv Shimson, both originally from Israel, both living here now. Amazing wedding photographers. Like, their work's just phenomenal. Blows me out of the water every time I look at it. I met Shlomi the first time through the Jonas Peterson workshop in Toronto.
Networking, I like it.
Yeah, he held it at his studio. So I kept in touch and went out shooting after meeting a few times. So, totally cool guys. If anyone wants to check them out, you should go to Shlomi Amiga Weddings. I'll put that in the link there for you. And Niv Shimson, I'm not going to spell it right now, or I might spell it wrong, and we'll put that link in there too. Two awesome dudes. Awesome dudes.
Sounds good. I'm definitely going to have to check out their work and see what they got going on. That sounds awesome. But it's always nice to get out with, you know, other photographers and just get, you know, a different view. I know that the few workshops that I've been to, there's always, you know, some sort of Facebook group beforehand where we all kind of introduce, you go to the workshop, and then afterwards, people typically share the photos that they took at that workshop. And what I love most is seeing how different everybody's photos are for doing the exact same thing. And I think that it just really goes to show that, you know, as long as you're happy with it, that's all that makes anything a good photo. You know, there was just a photo that sold for $1 million of a potato.
Yeah.
$1 million, you know. And I mean, you look at it and you think, wow, this is probably the best photo of a potato that I've ever seen in my life. But it being $1 million, you can't really justify. But for somebody, they could justify it because they really liked it. And that's all that photography really is enjoying whatever it is that you like.
Hey, Raymond here from the future, and I really hope that you heard that last bit about a good photograph simply being one that you love, not necessarily the most perfect from a technical standpoint. I just wanted to chime in here and let you know that this series on the Exposure Triangle is still one of the most popular episodes of the podcast and continues to help photographers to this day better understand how their camera works. So do your best to listen past the less than perfect audio quality and enjoy. And also, stick around to the end of the episode where I'm going to share with you how you can grab a free camera settings cheat sheet to help further your understanding of photography. All right, let's get into it.
Listeners, this is your chance to go out and shoot other vegetables that you have on hand. And you might win the Powerball of the art world.
That's right. I think that asparagus is going to be the next big thing.
Please buy us a coffee if you do sell a carrot photo for $1 million. I would love to see it. Today, we're going to talk about the last part of the exposure triangle in our three-part series. Isn't that right, Raymond? We're going to talk about ISO today.
ISO. This is kind of a tough one sometimes to wrap your head around. It was for me when I was new. I didn't really understand how it was that cameras truly worked. So diving in deeper to figuring out how the one particular aspect of how this worked just kind of blew my mind. So hopefully today we're going to try to break it down into something really easy to understand so that you can go out and you know, feel confident in your abilities and utilize the, using the right ISL.
Let's start by, let's start talking about, before we deep dive right, really deep into it. I didn't even know what ISO meant for a long time. It's literally the most boring three words I've ever heard. The International Organization for Standardization.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't really sound like it relates to cameras at all, does it?
No, and I don't even want to go into why that is now the, you know, just trust us when we mean ISO.
yeah, the ISO is just a value. So it's whatever the number is, that is the value that it's being attributed to.
So let's talk about that. Raymond, in a completely big picture sense, how would you define ISO?
How would I define ISO? Well, technically, it is the amount of power being given to your sensor to increase its sensitivity to light. But I guess if I were to break it down, I would try to say, think of ISO like blinds on your windows, right? So when the blinds are closed, not much light is getting through, but you can still see that it's light outside. You're aware that, hey, I know that there's light behind those blinds. You might be able to see them through the cracks or whatnot. But it's not until, you know, you realize, wow, this room is really dark, I'm going to go open up these blinds. And then when you open it up, your room is flooded full of light, right?
Absolutely.
There's a ton of light in the room, and that's what having a higher ISO is. So changing your ISO value really determines how much light comes through, or how much light is accepted onto the sensor, I guess. But I think you, Callum, had an even better analogy than blinds.
Yeah, I was trying to think up some examples. I'm going to compare it a lot to cooking on the stove. And I'm a horrible cook. My fiance will attest to that, probably in court. But I like to think of it like this. The lower the ISO, so when you look at your camera and it tells you it's at ISO 100, that'd be like having a 1 on your cooking stove. You put the pasta in the pot with water, and you are going to take – it's going to take you 10 hours to cook that pasta, and you're going to be sitting there forever because – the pasta is not very sensitive to the heat. So in the same way that the sensor at ISO 100 is not very sensitive or very receptive of the light coming through the lens. But when you turn that bad boy up to max, up to high heat, you're going to be able to cook the pasta faster. Or to translate that, your sensor is actually going to be very sensitive at the highest ISO setting it can accept. So it will accept light as quickly as possible, and your pasta is going to cook very quickly. Your image is going to potentially expose much quicker. But Raymond, you did warn me that, you know, if I cook too hot or if I have my sensor too high, there is a chance for some issues, some problems to occur. Isn't that right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sure everybody here has tried to make, you know, either macaroni and cheese or something easy on the stove and somehow figured out, like, how did I burn this? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Can you burn pasta?
Yeah, I think you can. I think it just turns to glue, which is what it ends up doing in your stomach anyway. But, okay, so let's think of it like a piece of meat, you know. If you put it on medium, you know, 6 minutes and this thing's going to be done. But if you crank it up, if you crank up your heat all the way to high and you still put it on there for the full 6 minutes, you're taking a piece of charcoal off that that grill because it is just going to be burned. You're not going to be able to use it anymore. And it's kind of the same with a higher ISO. The higher your ISO is, you got to be careful because now you're introducing something called grain. And when you introduce grain, things start to get a little muddy. So in the same sense that now you just ruined your steak, you could potentially ruin your photo. Or if you want to say it like, instead of ruining the photo getting too muddy, now it could be too bright. And now you just can't even save it. Now it's just too bright. You don't even know what it is that you're looking at. It looks like a nuclear bomb just went off. And once again, you can't use it. But when you're in really low light settings, you know, or just very poor light, sometimes it doesn't even matter. You know, my philosophy is always capture the moment. Don't worry about the technical aspect of it. So I have no problem delivering a very grainy, high ISO photo if the moment was good.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. And with camera technology today, it's getting better and better by the quarter, by the year. I will shoot all the time at what my cameras can max out at because I am more afraid of not getting that moment that can't be remade than having, you know, a little bit of grain. And I think we should say that grain's not particularly a bad thing. Artists do use grain for artistic effect all the time. I think there is some people who really dislike grain. I know some photographers who just will not ever go near grain, hate it.
Well, I think the reason was because, you know, when digital sensors first came out, they weren't very technically good. So when you introduced grain, you really degraded the quality of your image. And it made sense, you know, especially if you're a professional, what you want is a very clean, crisp image, especially in the world of fashion photography, which is why they routinely shoot at ISO 20, you know? 20, yeah. That was ridiculous. A ton of light needs to come in to be able to get a properly exposed photo. But when they're in conditions
studio lights.
Yeah. When you have these conditions with giant lights, it's not an issue. But when you're out on a wedding day or possibly at maybe a family birthday party and you're indoors, you're not going to have those big studio lights. So to compensate, you just bump up your ISO. But I'm confident in the technology where we are today that I have no problem boosting up my ISO to a number like 6,400.
Yeah.
I'll shoot there all day.
Absolutely agree. So here's some two really good tips that we've come up with to help you kind of determine maybe where you want to be with ISO depending on the day and the conditions. So we were talking about this, Raymond, but ISO 100 would be used more in days where you need your sensor to be less sensitive. So that might be something like a bright sunny day where there's no clouds in the sky. Your camera sensor is going to really – it's going to be able to take in all that light, and you'll be shooting most of the time a much lower ISO. And similarly, you might want to go and use a higher ISO when it's an evening or at night. I'll go out 9 o'clock at night. You know, only street lights are on still and maybe window lights from stores, and I'll shoot up at 2,000, 3,200, 6,400. And shoot on that end. But there are times when you'll want to shoot lower, maybe in the bright daylight. And, you know, you might want to use a lower ISO even though it's kind of dark because you're going to use a longer exposure period. And that's totally fine. It's a bit of an experimentation. But those are some general guidelines there for you.
So let me ask you something, Ben.
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't you just always set your ISO at a high number just in case, you know, it turns night, so then you can just set it and forget it.
Oh, you absolutely could. You could do that, but there are a few probably positives from being aware of what your ISO speed for digital technology is. And one of the main considerations is that your ISO being at a lower number, especially in bright days, is going to give you a cleaner image. There's going to be no grain because one of the big problems with, as we talked about, boosting your ISO really, really high to maybe 6,400 is, besides the grain, it also affects the colors later. You're not going to be able to kind of adjust the exposure on your computer of that image. You'll be able to move it at there's going to be a less leeway for you to play with the image because it's going to be so sensitive to all that light.
So, yeah, that makes sense. That was a good example.
Yeah, that's where I would go with that. Also,
would you worry about possibly, having too high of a shutter? Like maybe you couldn't get the shutter fast enough if you just kept it at a high ISO? Would that be a problem?
It can be a concern in situations maybe with people running or sports cars. If you remember our conversation during the shutter speed episode, you would be trying to shoot as fast as your camera can possibly let you, but your ISO would be too high and you'd have very overexposed images that you might not be able to save later. So you would want to bring down your ISO to something more appropriate and shoot as fast as you can to freeze that sports car that you're trying to take a photo of. Another big, big positive that I like, especially in the Nikon realm, I'm sorry, Raymond, since you're on Canon, is I like to actually shoot a little bit underexposed so that if I have a really beautiful day with the sun out, I'll shoot so I'm exposing for the sun and the sky so I can get those nice blues. But then what you do see is it's very dark on the ground. And I will actually go on my computer and make just the ground brighter later because you can take those shadows or the dark areas and bring them back. At a higher ISO, it's much harder to do that. And you don't get to save it because you're actually going to affect the image. And there's not enough data in the sensor.
Yeah, that makes sense. And unfortunately, that's just something that, you know, Canon technology hasn't really kept up with. Hopefully for the 5D Mark IV, we'll be able to see a change. But as of today, you really only get maybe a stop or two of latitude before it just turns, you know, your shadows turn really muddy and just unusable. So I do envy you. I do envy you a little bit there in your Nikon sensors. But I think, you know, that may be looking too far ahead for a lot of people who are just starting out, who are worried about their, you know, camera limitations and whatnot. So
absolutely.
I think, you know, going back to what it is that you were talking about, having trying to relate times of day with what ISO you should be using, you said that using, you know, ISO 100 would be good for, you know, a day with lots of sun, maybe a summer day at the beach or even the snow, which you might not think about, or even going to the zoo with family, maybe a soccer game. When would you use something a little higher like ISO 400 or ISO 600?
Yeah, I might boost the ISO up to 400 to introduce, you know, much more light or sensitivity and potential light so that I might want to stop down my image. And what I mean by that is closing that hole in the lens so that I can have more depth of field in case I have maybe my running dog and they're going to be running through an area. If I have a big hole, if you remember our aperture episode, you're going to have a shallower depth of field. But that introduces more light, which is great, but you have that shallow depth of field. And if my dog runs too fast, they're going to be completely out of focus because they're not in the right area where I'm focusing. So I might close down that hole, make a larger depth of field, which also means I have less light available. So I'll boost the ISO so I can compensate for that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. When would you maybe boost up to ISO 400 or so?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of what we're talking about really pertains a lot to film because ISO 100, 400, and 800, I would say, are the most popular film speeds or ISOs. In the film world, it's just called speed to the listener. So it'd be 800 speed film as opposed to ISO 800 in a digital camera. But almost like we were talking about earlier, I rarely shoot below 1,000 because what I value, like I said earlier, was getting the right moment. And sometimes to do that, I have to boost my ISO up to 1,000 so that I can use a faster shutter speed. If I'm indoors, say at a church or, you know, inside of, you know, I was going to say women's dressing room, but it sounds much easier with context of bridesmaids.
Nope.
I don't hang out in women's dressing rooms, just FYI. But I would use a higher ISO because typically the lighting in there isn't very good. It's usually fluorescent, and I want an adequate shutter speed so that I can capture the photo but not get, you know, for fluorescent lights, weird stripes.
Absolutely.
So for 400, I mean, I'd have to really, like, it'd have to be a bright day. I'd have to be outside for sure. Or I would be using flash, which this is getting a little too advanced for where we are right now. But when you use your flash, you really only have a limited amount of time that you can use it, that your camera can see it. So you have to have a very low shutter speed of typically 200, a 200th of a second or less. So to be able to do that when you're outdoors, you need very, very low ISO, just so that it would be very unsensitive to light. So basically today we're shooting at speeds of 1,000 plus, where 5 years ago if you were shooting at 1,000 or up on film or on digital, you really wouldn't even be able to print that to an 8x10 before it would just look really muddy and kind of gross and start to break apart. So if you're really getting into photography now, like, you should just be really excited about this, because the amount of opportunities that are out there didn't exist a few years ago. And today, so many things are possible that you wouldn't have been able to get a few years ago. So that really excites me. But if we're talking traditionally, an ISO of like 800, 1200, or even higher would really be, I mean, it'd be pretty dark. Yep. You know, you can get a pretty properly exposed image at ISO 1200 if you are, you know, if you got a pretty good lens, or if you got a pretty steady hand and can lower your shutter speed, for sure. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on how often you go into the higher ISOs.
Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com, and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit.
I have absolutely no qualms with going into the higher ISO. I did that at a sunrise engagement shoot on the weekend there, and we were really lucky that we had beautiful sunlight. But even just after sunrise, I'm still shooting. I believe I started somewhere around 1600 that morning, just because the sun was still very low, even though it looked quite bright outside. Just with the way I shoot, shooting around 2.8. Maybe around F4, I was shooting up there at 1600 because I wanted to shoot fast enough while they were walking. This was a couple who was very energetic, so they moved a lot. And I didn't want to shoot at a slow shutter speed so that they would and result in them being blurry, because the clients wouldn't like that. So I upped my shutter speed to something much faster so I could freeze them. But that also meant that I was shooting higher on my ISO settings to compensate. So I started at 1600, but by the time we went to move indoors, just before that, I was shooting down at ISO 400. So you can see the shift in an hour and a half that I went from 1600 ISO to 400, and you would never know. The technology is that good these days.
And again, that wouldn't have even been possible a few years ago, because when you load 800 film speed into a film body, you got to empty out that roll before you can change your ISO.
Yep.
Or how sensitive the film is. So if you were out there and you needed that ISO 8 or 1200, you said, to get started, and then by the end of it you were using 400, you either would have been using a lot of filters, or you would have just had to underexpose your image in the beginning and then just had to push it later. So once again, another testament to how great, you know, the camera technology is today, and just another way that we can utilize it.
We're very lucky to have to be in the digital age of photography. And, you know, also a big shout out to all the amazing film photographers who are still out there, you know, every day, who make amazing images that blow me away. And they're like shooting ISO 400 through 30 shots in like different light. Just impressive stuff. Impressive. So amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're going to get into this more in the next episode, which is going to be the wrap-up of the exposure triangle and how to bring it all in together. But when it comes to film, I mean, you're definitely more limited. And when you're shooting on film, that aspect of the exposure triangle is already taken care of for you. You never have to worry about it. What you have to worry about now is the other two, which is just shutter speed and your aperture. So it's definitely much tougher, but it could get you in a, you know, creative space to where you're thinking differently, and maybe you can utilize your limitations, which is always fun to do.
Absolutely. Maybe that's a good idea for future weeks. Maybe in a month or so, we can challenge our listeners to setting their ISO to one certain setting and shooting a bunch of different situations, maybe early morning, after sunset, during sunset, and see how they have to adjust their settings to compensate for that one ISO setting. And then we could try it another few weeks after that, you know, at a certain aperture all the time.
Yeah, and then just see how people start to progress, share their photos with us on Instagram, Facebook, post them to our walls, send them to us in emails. That would be great as well. You know, really the main point here is that we're just trying to help you take better photographs. So if you ever have any questions or, you know, inquiries about what it is that maybe you're doing wrong or that you're not fully understanding, be sure to, you know, email us, reach out to us on Facebook, just let us know whatever it is, and we would love to help. And one of those things is definitely taking a look at your photographs. And I don't want to sound pompous or anything, but having done this for a long time, there's, and I'm sure Callum can attest to this, you can just look at a photo and immediately know, like, okay, well, this person could have done this differently if they were looking to achieve this look, just by looking at the settings. And it's all because of the exposure triangle. So if you have any questions, be sure to send them to us. Reach out. Callum and I will be more than happy to answer them for you.
Absolutely. We've been getting questions on the Facebook page recently. So that's great.
Yeah, it's been really fun interacting with everybody. And if you haven't already, please go ahead and sign up. Again, that's facebook.com/beginnerphotographypodcast. If you have any questions, reach out, like us. We share tutorials all the time. It's always fun. We're just a group of fun going people.
Raymond's not fun. I'm the fun one, guys. I'm the fun one, guys and girls.
He's the one in charge of the Facebook account, so he is the fun one. I just like to take credit for it.
I'll let him have it.
You know, another aspect, though, if we're getting back on ISO, is, you know, this whole grain thing that we've been talking about. A lot of people don't really, they can't visualize it in their head if they haven't seen it before. So I guess, you know, if you really think about it, it just starts to look very, I was going to say grainy, but that doesn't really help out.
It can look like the quality has diminished.
Yeah.
It can give that appearance for sure.
And you'll see it most in like defined lines. If you're shooting a brick wall, or if you're really close to somebody, you'll be able to see it in their face. You won't be able to see as much detail. So if somebody has, you know, it can be nice if somebody has maybe some, you know, facial blemishes, because that ISO at higher end is gonna mask some of it. But at the same time, you're just not going to get the clearest image that you could to do something that, you know, can easily be done in either Lightroom or Photoshop. So if you really want to try to get something right in camera, I would say that that would be the way to do it. But if you want to spend more time manipulating your photos, maybe you want to be a fine art photographer and you want to spend more time inside of Photoshop or Lightroom, then I would just shoot for the cleanest image possible. And then from there, go ahead and manipulate it after the fact.
Absolutely. And wait, you know what? I'm going to go on right after this podcast and share a grainy image that I personally have, just to give everyone an example. So go over to the facebook.com/beginnerphotographypodcast page and check it out after this, once you've listened to us.
Nice. That's awesome. That's a great idea. And I think I might even have one to be able to share as well. It was actually kind of at a recent wedding, and this is kind of an interesting story, just to how great ISO is. So I was at a wedding, and it was a beautiful wedding. I really enjoyed it. But for the entire reception, I had two off-camera flashes set up just to light up the dance floor and the rest of the dining area, I guess. So at the end of the night, it was time to go. I said, "Hey guys, we're taking off. Have a great night." And they're like, "Oh, thank you so much." You know, we said our goodbyes. And then as we were walking out, one of the guests grabbed me and said, "You're not leaving yet, are you?" And I said, "Yeah, taking off. We got everything." And they said, "No, we have a surprise." And I said, "Oh, okay." All my lights were already tore down, and I didn't have the exposure that I had before. So what I had to do was I already had to bump up my ISO because, for one, it's night. And for two, usually in a reception, people are dancing. They already turned down the lights. So it's very low. So I just had to do what I had to do, and I cranked up my ISO all the way up to 8,000, which at the time scared the hell out of me because I didn't know how the photos were going to turn out. I'd never shot there before, especially something, you know, so highly anticipated or, you know, a big deal. So, but I just had to do it because that's I couldn't tell them, hold up, wait, let me go grab my flash, let me set it back up and do all this. So I bumped it up to ISO 800 or 8,000 rather. The surprise came out. It's a Russian Orthodox tradition to have somebody dress up as whatever the career of the groom will be taking. If that makes sense.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So in this case, the groom was a wrestling coach, and he's a fantastic wrestling coach. He's got a ton of awards and everything. Teaches kids. And so somebody came out in one of those full, like, green man suits, you know, like from head to toe, but with a wrestling called
leotard.
It is called a leotard? Okay, so they're in a wrestling leotard. And they come out, and then they basically just start a conga line. And it was amazing. It was so much fun to be a part of. And then when I got back home and I looked at the photos, my first thought was, oh, yeah, I shot these at ISO 8000. Like, I didn't even realize it because looking at these photos, they were so compelling because it was the moment that, you know, what meant the most and will mean the most to the couple. So I delivered them to them. And, you know, of course, there were no issues with the photo. But if you just compare one, if you compare the photo side by side with another one of the reception, you can easily tell the difference between the two. You know that this one was shot at a lower ISO because I had the help of flash. And then the other one was shot at a higher ISO because I didn't have the luxury of the flash at the time, but I still needed the same amount of light.
So, can you share that photo? Because I would love to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I will definitely post it in the Facebook group.
Awesome.
The second that everybody listens to this. So once you listen to this, come check out that photo. I mean, if you've ever wanted to see, a green man in a wrestling leotard, head over to the Facebook group. Check that out right now and let me know what you think about that photo. If
awesome.
You would still like it, because like I said, I did end up delivering that photo to the clients and they loved it because like Calvin and I have been saying this whole time, it's about the moment. And if you have basic knowledge of your camera, you're going to be able to utilize it every single time.
Without fail. Absolutely.
Hey, Raymond here again. I really hope that you found this episode all about ISO's role in the exposure triangle very helpful. Like I mentioned at the in the intro, I am a visual learner. You may be as well. We are photographers. That wouldn't be a stretch of the imagination. So I want to give you a free download, one of our most popular. It is called Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It is a cheat sheet full of personal and professional images of mine, that I've been taken over the past 10 years with 10 plus types of popular photography, along with the camera settings that I used to capture those images. So you can have a solid starting point when you go out and shoot for yourself. Now, if you want to grab it for free, you can do so by heading over to perfectcamerasettings.com. Again, grab your free Picture Perfect Camera Settings cheat sheet by heading to perfectcamerasettings.com. That is it for today. Now, I hope that you can go out and practice changing up your ISO to see what you are comfortable with, maybe what's a little bit too high, and what you would gladly go out and shoot any time of the day and still be able to capture great images. Because remember, the more that you shoot today, the better of a photographer you will be tomorrow. Talk to you soon.